Welcome back, everybody. This is Eric and Matt, and this is Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit, your beacon of freedom and the American way of life. Tune in every Friday for a new episode as we dive into the world of liberty and what makes our country great. All right, everybody. I hope everyone has had a great week. Eric and Matt here with LLP. Welcome
Howdy.
Back.
Howdy.
All right. We have got a great podcast set up here for you today, and we're going to be talking about the lost art of civil discourse. I think you're really going to enjoy this one. I hope that you'll hang out with us for this hour and be involved in this conversation. And that's kind of, by definition, the very, subject of today's podcast is conversation.
That's right.
And or sometimes
and,
a lack of.
And the lost art of. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I thought we brought up, off camera, we were, kind of spitballing and thinking of some different stuff. And I thought this was a great subject. Took a little convincing because I didn't know if you guys wanted to hear this type of, content. But then, why wouldn't you? I mean, a lot of the stuff that we're talking about are things that even myself or you, Eric, tend to forget. And, if you don't practice it and you don't keep utilizing it and using it, it goes away. It is a perishable skill that you lose. It's like any other skill. So if you might have been the best shooter, but if you don't shoot for 10 or 20 years and you pick up, you'll be okay, but you won't be as good as you used to be.
So oh, yeah.
You always got to keep the tool sharp.
Man, I'll tell you, I think this conversation is going to go well. And I would like to take a moment to thank our friends at RMA Armament before we get started today. Their body armor is amazing, all American made, veteran owned company. We've done a lot of testing on their stuff. It's held up really, really good. And I tell you what, for the money, they have a great product for fantastic value. If you do decide you want to pick up some RMA armor, use the code IV8888 and you can save yourself 10%, which is always nice.
On their website.
Yep. Saving money is always a good thing. So big thanks to RMA for supporting LLP and our channel, Iraq Veteran 8888. And just so you, before we get started too far, too, little housekeeping, you can follow us over on Iraq Veteran 8888 if you want to see this particular podcast in video form. We film this from different angles and stuff. And we, especially for the flights, we have a lot of fun with this.
We got all fancy.
Yeah, we got all fancy pants, boy. So there is that option. And then obviously, if you follow us on all the different outlets for podcasts, make sure you leave us a nice review. And that helps us show up in the search results a little bit higher priority, okay? So what is civil discourse? All right, let's just define what civil discourse means, just so we kind of understand where everybody's coming from. Civil discourse is engagement in discourse and or basically conversation intended to enhance understanding. It is discourse that supports rather than undermines the societal good, okay? This makes sense, right? So what we have is the lost art of conversation. Conversation is an art form, right? Conversation doesn't mean that I have to have a discussion with someone and then go into the discussion thinking that A, I'm going to change someone else's mind, B, they're going to change my mind, or C, that we're automatically going to be in a pissing match with each other because we simply disagree on a few areas of understanding when it comes to the way that we're trying to approach a problem. This is part of everyday common sense problem-solving skills, right? We have to engage in an objective ability to say, here's my problem. Now, there are many ways I can attack this problem, but I need to look at it from all different sides to know the most efficient way to solve the problem. Now, I'm looking at this in a very analytical way. Now, we're talking about how does Q Public at large take that type of decision-making process and put it in their mind and make something of it. Well, they're not. That's just it. The art of civil discourse, the art of conversation, the art of being objective is something that is lost. And look at our youth, okay? Now, it's very easy for a given group of society. All right, say how many times, right, did your grandfather or your dad or the older generation when you were growing up say, well, these kids today, there is a mental issue that we wind up getting into when we get older, right? We think that all of the worst of society and our problems are to blame to the youth? Was that because we're projecting our own inadequacies onto our kids by thinking, well, we just didn't raise them well enough, but instead of admitting that we didn't raise them right, we're just going to blame them because kids are to blame? That's not what we're getting at, and that's not the picture I want to paint in this podcast, because look, being a kid in this world right now is tough, and being a young teenager, a young adult is tough, right? So we end up in situations where sometimes it can be hard for us to really understand how to have conversations. Look at the physical barriers to conversation that exist, right? The advent of social media, people can hide behind a keyboard. They can just say something that in their heart, maybe they know is heinous, that it's not true, maybe. Or maybe they can be very, very openly passionate about a given subject that really, if they were to sit down and have an honest conversation with the adversary or the perceived adversary, maybe they would change their mind or be a little bit more understanding about the situation. Now, what does this have to do with anything other than trying to say, oh, well, the kids are to blame, right? No. Look at the solutions that people come up with for the problems. Okay, well, if these young kids get in, all right, I saw something the other day, a terrible, terrible event occurred, right? It was outside of a burger joint or something, and these kids were arguing. Apparently, from what I understand, they were employees of this establishment, and the kid pulls out a pistol and just guns down the other kid right there in public, in the street, in broad daylight. Now, you know, one could say, well, they had discourse, they just argued, and that was the end result. They decided to use violence. But that's the thing. It's like, we have done such a poor job of raising our kids and teaching them right from wrong and teaching them to be objective, and we've done such a poor job of giving them a platform where they can ask questions, even if they might be at the failure of being wrong, right? We've done that to them, and we've made them feel that violence is the only solution that they're ever going to have. And you know what? In my day, you know, if you had a disagreement with somebody that couldn't be solved with a little bit of civil discourse, right? A little conversation, right? Let's understand, kids are kids, right? Kids are going to do crazy things. Kids are going to fight. We got in fights. We got in fights all the time, right? But we lived. We survived. Yeah, we might have a black eye. We might have got a little strawberry or a bruise. Yeah, we might have got a ripped t-shirt. But at the end of the day, you suck it up and you take it as a learning experience and you move on. Whether you lost or won, that's not really what it was about, was it? When you get in a fight when you're a kid, it's just about, I'm asserting my dominance or my ability to be right over you. Whether or not I'm right is irrelevant. So what kids must engage in and must learn is the art of conversation, Matt.
I agree. And I think that as the generation of adults that are raising the youth that are failing at the task of learning how to have meaningful conversation, you know, we can sit here and place the blame on them all we want. But when it comes down to it, it's us. We're to blame. And when you start looking at stuff like, and a great takeaway is, you know, I was having a conversation with my brother, and you know, my brother and I, we don't always see eye to eye on certain things, you know, both politically and in life. And we'll be having a conversation, and you know, he'll say something, and I'm giving him in a conversation in discourse. I'm like, hey, that's because of this. This is because of that. And I'm giving him facts and things to back up what I'm talking about. And one of these, he said something profound. He was like, you know, you've mastered the art of not getting mad, but making the other person get mad and then pointing it out that they're mad. And I thought to myself, well, that's not really a tactic. That's just me having a conversation. You getting mad is your failure to be able to hold that conversation. And I didn't realize that's what was happening until he pointed it out. And then you start realizing it with other people you talk to. So you'll see them kind of get, you know, a little puffy and they get kind of upset. And it's not that, well, yes, we all know that there are people out there that are a-holes. I am not an a-hole. I just happen to, when I talk with somebody, I'm very matter of fact about it. I say, hey, this is the reason why that happens. If you're pointing out certain instances to me or scenarios to me, I'm going to tell you why that happened and why it occurred. If you get mad, you get mad. It's not my problem. But, and that comes down to, you know, even as adults, we can't say that only the youth have a problem with, you know, talking and holding a conversation. Adults do as well. And that's because we, even as adults, we're growing up in the same society of instant gratification, of, you know, winning conversations, shouting people down. If you don't agree with somebody, you know, some people are told, well, just walk away. You don't have to talk to this person if you don't agree with them, which is fine. You have the right to do that, but you're also not really learning anything. You're not taking away from that engagement. So with me, I've had to have conversations with people that I don't necessarily like personally, but you're sitting at a table with them. Are you just going, and you're eating dinner. So are you just going to just get up and I'm retiring for the evening? Good night. You know, like that.
Good day.
Yeah. You know, I said good night. You know, you don't do that. You have to hold that conversation. And we're not talking debate tactics. That's a completely different thing. So debate tactics, you'll see people like throw out there, oh, that's a red herring. That's a straw man. You're moving the goalpost. You're changing the narrative. So no, that's completely different. But just your basic conversational skills of being able to engage, understand, not get upset at, you know, what the context of the conversation is, and being able to digest it and have a meaningful conversation on that same subject without showing emotion. This whole, like, society as a whole, not just the youth, we're clinging on to this emotional, you know, attachment to, you know, conversation. And then I get it. Emotion is good, but you don't have to be, you know, so emotional about everything. I'm pretty binary when it comes to conversation. So,
well, let's face it. Like, conversation, especially in the social media realm. I mean, you look at Twitter, and I will admit I have a love-hate relationship with Twitter, because I do enjoy kind of putting some of my random thoughts out there and just seeing how people are going to react to it. So instantly right there, people already have a sort of predisposed notion to kind of go, well, maybe we do want to know what our peers think. Maybe we do want to put a little opinion or earworm out there every now and then and just see what people have to say. And of course, what Twitter sort of divulged into, or yeah, you know, degraded into rather, is that, you know, people are just automatically going to attack you on anything you say. And they're just going to say whatever the opposite is. And this toxic environment of just, well, people are just going to be jerks on Twitter. But that's not always the case. I must say that I have had some great conversations on Twitter, and I have had some thought-provoking and thought-changing conversations on Twitter. And you know what? Those conversations are out there, and you do have the ability to have them with people that you can kind of get an idea if they're mature enough to go there, right? And that's difficult to find people that are of that caliber that are willing. It almost takes a different kind of thought process to even say, hey, you know, sarcasm's hard to detect over the internet.
Oh, it totally is.
Whether or not someone's joking around or what their intention really is, the human face, when you're talking to someone and looking them in the eye, their mannerisms, the way they act, where they're looking, their body language, all of those things have a lot to do with how that conversation is going to go. Now, if I just type a very generic statement and put it on Twitter, it's going to be very difficult for the end user to really know what the true meaning of the post is. So therein lies a challenge, okay? A lot of these young folks, maybe they've gotten relatively good at that form of communication, okay? But it also seems that in that form of communication, it quickly sort of goes into something basic as, whoever can be the loudest is right.
That's right.
And the loudest voice must be the most correct voice. And then when you look at the censorship in big tech and their ability to go, well, I disagree with this person's opinion, instead of debating them and defeating their opinion with superior facts and superior logic and superior decision-making process, I'm simply going to unperson them. Like what happened on me with Facebook. I know I mentioned it briefly in another podcast we made, but I mean, they pulled my Facebook page over some crap, over some bull crap. So instead of defeating me with wisdom and logic and, you know, like the folks of old had to do way back in the day, you couldn't just cancel someone standing right in front of you that's about to, you know, get cross with you unless you can talk your way out of a situation very quick. Mm-hmm. I mean, always remember your vertebral judo. That's what all of this comes down to. You should be able to fight. You should be able to protect yourself. Mm-hmm. You should have the capabilities and be capable as a person, whoever you are, to defend yourself and protect yourself, be that through the manner of being a firearms owner and defending yourself with a firearm, or being physically fit and capable of protecting yourself from a physical standpoint, or being good at some sort of a martial art, whatever the case may be, whatever defense mechanisms we put in place to protect ourselves physically from physical harm, those things can also be exacerbated and or completely made a non-issue simply by engaging with your verbal judo. And verbal judo is one of those things they certainly try to teach to, like, police officers. Some of them are really good at it. Some of them are sly. Some of them aren't.
Yeah, some of them are really bad.
Right, but we're all guilty of it too. I mean, what are police but people before they're police, right? So you got to look at the bare bones, back to the basics cauldron that make us who we are. We're all people to begin with before we put on our masks in society, before we put on our costume, our Bruce Wayne of the day. You know, like Superman and Clark Kent. You know, that's the same thing. Like Superman gets up and is born freaking Superman. He woke up Superman. Okay. So you are who you are when you wake up that day, and your moral and principles and everything that make you who you are, that identity exists before you put on the clothes of the day, whatever those clothes might be. Whether you're Clark Kent or a police officer or a garbage man, you are who you are before you put your clothes on that day.
That's right. So one thing real quick about the taking stuff out of context that reminded me, and you saw me looking it up. So on my phone, I like to take notes so I can,
So if you see me
dabbling,
yeah, I'm taking notes. He's taking notes.
So that reminded me of the Key and Peele skit called Text Message Gone Wrong.
Yeah.
And that's what that reminded me of, because, like, guys, just go to YouTube and type in Key and Peele Text Message Gone Wrong. Absolutely hilarious. But it's like, it shows you through comedy and satire, like, how far the human brain takes stuff when they're reading these text messages, and one person is like, oh yeah, hey, okay, and then the other person interprets it completely negatively. This is what happens when you're not paying attention to the person in front of you, the conversation that you're having, the mannerisms, the body language, all of that comes into play. But what, Eric, what you were talking about right after that, about meaningful conversation and losing the art to ask questions, that's actually referred to as the Socratic method, brought to us by Socrates. And that's basically where one person will ask probing questions and the other person answers. And it helps move forward meaningful conversation. So if I'm not understanding why something doesn't work, I'm going to ask you. Now, here's the rub. There's right now in society, there's this movement of indoctrination and just kind of going with it, hearing something without looking into it or doing research it. And they're just like, oh yeah, I believe in this. And you see a lot of arguments because someone tries to engage in the Socratic method. Well, tell me, Eric, why do you believe that, and what makes it so good? And they can't answer, so they get defensive. That defensive nature that happens to everybody.
It's not healthy to just use that as a blanket way to get out of it, though.
Right.
That's the issue.
So
it's okay to get... Look, if I'm called off guard, all mm-hmm. right, we're having a conversation, and you go, well, that... And I always hate to do this. I hate to go back to Rogan, but mm-hmm. Rogan is brilliant at it. He's the master of it.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
is Crowder.
So, yeah, and so is Stephen Crowder. I mean, look, lots of folks are. I'd like to think, you know, maybe we got a decent view of it. But the thing is, you know, well, I feel very strongly about opinion A. All right, well, that's all good and fine. Well, tell me about that. Why? I mean, so what is it about that? You know, and you ask and you probe. And look, that's all right. If that reveals something about me that maybe I need to do some more internal research or internalization of trying to rationalize it, that's okay, because that's what civil discourse is meant to do. It is meant to have the conversation so that people can come away from it stronger, right? I'm the kind of person, if you ask me something that it might kind of catch me off guard and make me, because we have a tendency to sometimes want to get a little offensive if someone asks us something that's kind of outside the wheelhouse, and you're like, whoa, hang on, you're pushing me out of the ring here. Like, this is a little weird. Okay, I'm the kind of person that I don't respond offensively. I respond more foolishly. I'm like, oh, well, wow, you caught me off guard. I'll just say. Mm-hmm. I'll just go cut straight to the chase. Hey, you caught me off guard there a little bit. That's a great question, Matt. I would love to get you an answer. I'm not sure that's something I'm ready to discuss right this moment, but maybe I can kind of think about that a little bit. I don't know. I've never thought about it like that, Matt, right?
That's so right.
When you acknowledge that, it becomes power. You can take that knowledge and go, here is something that this worthy opponent has revealed in me that is a weakness that I need to now make better. And then maybe on the next time we have a conversation, I will have something for my opponent that will challenge his views in a way that he will come away stronger. It's just about being honest with people.
Yeah.
And honest with yourself.
Well, you see,
Dr. Phil here, a Dr. IV8888. I'm actually not a doctor, but boys and girls.
But I play one on
but
TV.
But I play one on YouTube. Yeah. Anyway, look, I hate to be corny. I don't mean that to be cheesy. I'm just saying that what that comes down to, Matt, at the end of the day, is that people can use conversation in a way that makes them stronger, and most importantly, where they go, well, you know what? Somewhere in the back of that poor young kid's head, man, he was like, well, I'm going to shoot this guy. You know, like the situation with the employees arguing. It's like, at what point did your logical nerve center tell you that your answer with the argument this person, that you've argued so much, that the only answer is to end that other person? Now, is that to say that it's outside the bounds of human nature for us to have such words and to be so cross that we're going to fight each other? Well, of course not, because people have been hurting each other for a long, long time. I mean, all right, look at a lot of our founding fathers, in fact. They loved to duel, right? That's how they would settle an argument, was with a duel. So I'm not putting aside the masculine urges that men have to assert their dominance over other people. I don't want it, certainly, for people to not think that you shouldn't be able to engage in manhood when it is necessary. You need to be able to back up what you say. Okay, so you can say what you want. You can have your opinion. You can try to, you know, respectfully and civilly change the opinions of others. But you also must be willing to defend your opinion to the death if necessary.
I agree to the point where I have a hard time understanding how someone could say something to you that would make you want to kill them. I mean, with just outside of like threats, okay? Like if you're outside
we don't know what was said,
right,
to be fair.
Outside of threats to like your family, your kids, your wife, like whatever. So let's take that off the table because that is probably grounds for dismissal. From the earth.
Yeah. Like don't go there. Okay.
But if you're just having a conversation with somebody,
well, someone messed with your daughter. Oh yeah.
Oh uh-uh. Man.
No yeah, way.
You're dismissed from the earth.
Someone messes with her. You won't have to dismiss them. I will.
Yeah, that's right. So it's hard. It's a hard pill for me to swallow to get to a point where like you're gonna say something to somebody that's going to cause you to end their life.
Imagine being the government and saying, well, we disagree with you, other government, and by the way, we're gonna send like all of our people to hurt all of your think about how crazy that sounds.
Yeah, man. That's
like
nuts.
If you just remove the institutionalism of it all. Right. I mean, I hate to like aliens. I mean, look, but the thing is, it's like if you remove the institutionalism of that conversation. Right. And you just look at it as a conversation, as two grown men arguing with each other. But you happen to be a grown man that has an army.
Yeah.
And I happen to be a grown man that has an army. And it's like when you remove the institutionalism, it's like, well, it's really just argument.
Yeah. We're just two dudes with armies that are going to duke it out.
Yeah. And we're going to duke it out. I mean, it's so random, isn't it?
Yeah.
And
but that's funny enough. That's how it happened. It was like one king that had his army. Another king was like, I don't like you. And I'm going to take your land. I mean, just throwing bodies at each other.
It's pretty random, isn't it? I mean, that's terrible. I mean, look how far we've come. I mean, we've come a long way from hundreds of thousands of men perishing on a field of battle, bleeding out and screaming in agony.
Mm-hmm.
With no modern medical convenience, you've got missing arms and all sort of terrible wounds from swords and freaking, you know, all kind of bludgeoning objects and arrows. I mean, could you imagine a primitive battlefield where people were fighting, and how frightening that must have been. And what perspective those people came away with that survived. Imagine surviving that.
Mm-hmm.
And you live to tell about it. And imagine the conviction that you're going to have when you explain things to people, right? As to what you've lived through and what your life experiences were. And I think like, you survived that. You saw that death and that destruction. The weight that you train your kids on how to deal with a situation is going to be completely different than someone today.
Yeah. And
look,
that's...
you don't understand what I've seen, son. I've seen men scream in agony by the thousands. Imagine that's your father. Yeah. It taught you, you know, how to be a person and move forward. We're missing that in our society. Like, people are not taking those lessons and explaining the context of what they learned from something, putting it into the future.
Well,
for the younger, you know, generation.
Well, and that has to do with the emergence of, you know, the quote troll and the ability to say something without any repercussions. And you get so used to being able to say whatever you want to say without any ramifications that you start to do it in real life. So what started as just being on the keyboard saying really nasty and mean things and telling people to go kill themselves and calling them racial slurs. So they get so used to doing that, that when you meet someone in real life, you think that you can just say whatever you want to say to someone's face and there's not going to be any repercussions. Now, no one's going to kill you, but I'll tell you this. If you do any of that stuff around myself and you think you're just going to walk up and just spout whatever you want to spout, there's not going to be any repercussions, you'll have a very interesting surprise. And that's the problem. A lot of younger generations, that's what they're used to. So much so that a good example of that is, and this happened in 2020, it was a NASCAR driver by the name of Kyle Larson. They were doing the virtual iRace because NASCAR got locked down and they weren't hosting any races. So they did the same NASCAR races, but virtually. So they were using virtual cars. And this goes back
to... We've got to give it to him for the intuition. I mean, that's kind of smart.
But, you know, again, and this is prevalent in the gaming community. In the gaming community... I used to game all the time. You just say whatever you want over the microphone. There's no repercussions. You're talking like nothing is off bounds, man. And you gamers out there know what I'm talking about. He happened to drop the N-bomb on TV recorded on the hot mic with all of the other NASCAR drivers. And, you know, you just get so used to doing it while either gaming or on the computer that even when you're in professional mode, hey, I'm working, it still slips out because you're just so used to it. And, you know, this is what it's coming to, grown men doing that on TV. And how do you face your coworkers and your other drivers and your staff? I mean, that's quite embarrassing to, you know, let something like that happen. And also, you know, what are the ramifications for that? He was suspended for a couple of races and then he goes back on. I'm not advocating for his removal, but at the same time, I mean, it's a little light. It's a little bit of some light medicine there. So
it's kind of random, isn't it?
It is.
You know, it's kind of thought-provoking too to look back on my youth, you know, and look back on what it was like, you know, to grow up in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a different environment back then. And, you know, I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of what some of these young people are probably experiencing now. Of course, at my age, I'm never going to really know what it's like to be a kid again. And that's so hard to think about, right? Like,
well, our youth was kind of taken from us.
We get to it. Well, I'll drink some coffee.
Yeah,
well, there's no alcohol in here, but I'll have a drink to that. You're right, Matt. But there's going to come a point, there's a cutoff point where a person doesn't know really what it's like to be young again. They're further, they're closer to being gone from this earth than they were when they got here. And that's frightening. That's a scary prospect to think about, right? But if there are young folks listening, I hope there are. Maybe this speaks to you in some way. I can just say that, believe it or not, we were young once too. And even the oldest person that you've run into and you think, well, this old person doesn't know anything and, you know, they're just trying to tell me what to do. Yeah, but they were young too. We all were. So looking back on it, though, our raising and how we were brought up, the 90s was a really interesting time to be a young person in America. It really was. It was a strange time. I mean, like, remember the early days of AOL and everything?
Oh, boy.
And, like, and I loved old school gaming, man. I used to play Doom over a LAN, over local access network, and that was cool. Now, here's this interesting situation, all right? You were talking about the race. All right? Kids would sit around in these rooms and play games together, or you'd play on a console, and everybody, you'd have four people hooked up to one console, like a Nintendo, Super Nintendo, 64, whatever it might be. Arguably, the 64 was really awesome. Yeah. The point is, though, what would kids do? They'd sit there and, you know, oh, dang it, you know, and they yell at each other. And, but that provides that ability. The game is simply a way for them to get together and have a little, you know, conversations about things. Oh, well, I like this character better or that character better. Oh, you cheated or, oh, you're screen watching. It's just, but it does get people together and it brings people closer. And the 90s was an awesome time because kids had lots of ways to engage in all kind of cool things. Old school games, AOL chat rooms were a thing. People were just kind of starting to scratch that itch. But most of the people in chat rooms were folks like on the early AOL days. Those were people that you probably went to school with. So you would see them the next day. It wouldn't be like it would just be some stranger like it is now. There's so much more... you know, more people are way more anonymous now than what they used to be.
I'll tell you, man, I used to go to internet cafes all the time and we would play LANs. And I'll tell you what, the trash talking in the cafe was never as bad as what you see now. I mean, you are not just, oh man, it's terrible. Because you know why? Because you were there and there was repercussions. And if you said the wrong thing, you're throwing hands.
Yeah, and I love the early days of Xbox too, man. You know, I think that's when the whole, you know, chatting over while a game is going on, or like doing a death match and everybody really being able to chat a little bit more. That came into prevalence a lot more with like the Xbox and basically having a computer like ability for a console.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole because that's a whole nother podcast. We're going to do a podcast just on video game technology. Now, I want to talk real quick about somebody I have a lot of respect for. And I'm going to read one of his quotes here. And like, this man has inspired me more than I can ever. I'm telling you, you have no idea. I really, really love this guy. And Iron Mike Tyson. All right, look, I'm a Mike. I am the Church of Tyson. Okay, I love this dude.
Yeah.
Social media made you all way too comfortable with disrespecting people and not getting punched in the face for it. All right, it's a quote from Mike Tyson.
Yep.
If you don't know who Mike Tyson is, he's one of the greatest boxers ever lived. I mean, this dude will lay you into Sleepy Town in a heartbeat. He is you're gonna be seeing stars.
He was knocking grown men out at 13 years old. Dude. There's literally video of him sparring with professional boxers at the age of 13 and knocking them out. It's ridiculous.
You know, and like Mike Tyson, dude, he has gone through such a awe-inspiring and just like, it's so demanding of respect, the transition that he's sort of gone through and like really kind of just gotten to a really cool place in his life where he's come to terms with a lot of things. And like, I don't want to say like the level of violence that the man's capable of, because, you know, he's a freaking, you know, he can get whoever he needs to get. But we're talking about he's just got such a coolness to him now. Like, it's just so cool to hear him talk about things and articulate things going on when people ask him questions, the way he responds to people, the thought that he puts into it. And that's why I wanted to have Mike Tyson as an example in this particular podcast, not only because the quote is awesome, but because Mike Tyson teaches us, and we're learning from him, that in age, you can have a much more measured approach to how you look at a given problem, how you look at situations, and how ultimately, if one of the best boxers in the world can have a conversation and not just, you know, 40 years ago, I might have just beat the crap out of you. Well, I don't care what mm-hmm. you say. You're out of here. But when the greatest boxer can say, you know, violence might not be the answer here. I'm going to give a good, measured, objective approach. And I'm going to really ask you those questions. I'm going to be that empath to mm-hmm. you. He's kind of gotten almost to this shaman-like area in his life, and I'm digging it. I like where he's going, man.
I think that might have to do.
It inspires me, man.
That might have to do with his medicine that he's taken. He is a very big proponent of marijuana. He owns a marijuana company. Does very well.
Hmm.
And you know what? If it works, it works. He's a cool dude. And yeah. I give him a lot of respect because there's been a few times after he came out of jail when he was probably 3/4 of his journey there where he is now. He was sat down and he was doing some interviews with news companies and reporters, and they kind of tried to box him in to, no pun intended. They tried to put him, they called him in to do a segment, and then they tried to trick him. Basically, they were like, oh, well, let's talk about your past. And that wasn't what he was there to do. He was there to talk about, you know, his current endeavors, his business. And, you know, it's really sad to see that happen. And I have a lot of respect for him, because instead of getting angry, instead of, you know, he could have broke this dude in half. I mean, there's this little reporter and he's like this big dude. He just gets up and says, you know what? This isn't what I came here for. And shame on you for doing this. And he just takes the mic off and walks away. He's done that like 2 or 3 times. And it's, you know, shameful for, you know, the news agencies to try to do that and to try to get him on a gotcha, basically. But
it takes a bigger man to walk away sometimes.
Yeah.
You got to know when to walk away.
He's
just, because you can win a fight and you know going into it with a 90 percentile chance of success mm-hmm. that you're going to come out on top. Sometimes being the bigger man doesn't mean engaging in the fight you know you can win. It means walking away and having some humility. You know what I mean?
So yeah, yeah. Well,
that's important.
He said something that...
I'm not saying be a pushover now. I ain't suggesting you forgive all, but I'm just saying you need to have the ability to have some empathy sometimes.
Yeah. Well, he said something that was pretty profound, and... Somebody asked him about his son. He has a son, and he said, well, his son was interested in becoming a boxer. And he literally talked his son out of boxing, because he said, you know what? You don't come from a place that you're hungry enough to be. And this is off topic, but this is just something that I thought I would talk about.
No, it's great.
You know, he said that you don't come from a place that would warrant you to be a world-class boxer. You're not hungry enough. What happens if you get in the ring and you run into an 18-year-old guy like me? He's like, he would literally take your head off because he wants it more than you. And that's his way of saying that, enjoy what I've built for you and don't try to, you know, be something you're not. He's like, you were never poor. And I'm not saying poor is a precursor, but that's his words, not mine. Just saying, hey, when I came up, it was rough, man. It was a rough life. You know, I had nothing. This is all I had. This is the only way that I was going to make my life better. And his son doesn't have to do that. He has a different avenue. And I respect
that, what every father ultimately yeah. wants for their kid.
Yeah, but it is a hard thing to do, to sit there and say, I don't want my child to do this, even though they want to. You can do it, but to have that realization, to come to that coming to Jesus talk with your kid about, you know, hey, you don't fit the mold for this. Like, that's a hard conversation, man, to deny that to your kid.
But what more real conversation could you have? Is that, yeah. you know, the world is a, I know it's going to be hard to believe for a lot of people, the world is an unfair place.
No.
Very unfair. You
say
know,
it
so,
ain't so.
I think that's the importance of this civil discourse of discussion. And, but really what's odd about, you know, the podcast, we are very much engaging in the exact discussion we're talking about. I mean, there's a few things that Matt and I might be slightly indifferent here and there about, but we are able to sort of blend our opinions together. I mean, that's what it comes down. And that empathy is a big part of it. You know, your ability to respond to what others are really trying to convey. And for you young people out there that have spent a lot of time behind a computer, behind a social media app, or some text message window, where your brain is engaging in a very odd thing. It's engaging in some mental gymnastics because your brain is having a few different conversations than what you're actually reading, because your brain's trying to see a person, and they're not seeing a person. They're just seeing a screen. So our brains are forced to kind of fill in the gaps. And sometimes it doesn't always give us what we want. It doesn't give us fulfillment, right? Like, that's what it comes down to. If a conversation isn't fulfilling and filling you with some form of, even if it's not happiness, just fulfillment in general can be in a lot of different ways. A bad situation or a good situation can still give me fulfillment if it's bad or good that I'm looking for, right?
So, well, that, and, you know, I know,
I know that's kind of random, but.
Well, I know that we touched on, you know, the lost art of discourse, mm-hmm. but at the same time, we have to figure out why, like, what caused this. And, you know, I feel like it comes from a point of, you know, instant gratification. So every time, and I know everybody watching has seen it, you're going through YouTube and you, like, before the video starts, you see this ad about some type of guru, whether it's, you know, drop shipping, how to make money doing this, I've learned through my method, so here, just join this class. And they're showing you pictures or a video of, like, Lamborghinis and private planes and all this crazy stuff. And even when you go on Instagram or anything else, it's all about, you know, clout. Oh, look what I got. Look what I make this much money. And all of that is setting a false expectation for the youth, the younger generation coming up. They think that, oh, I should be having this stuff at the age of 25. I should have a Ferrari or a Lamborghini or a private plane or a business. Like, that's not true. I mean, even with the technology moguls, if you look at, and you can look this up, if you look at the average age of even a, you know, entrepreneur in the tech industry, average age is 45 years old. That is, so, like, look at, like, the Elon Musks and the Jeff Bezoses. They were well above 25 years old when they started, even with their first companies, and look where they're at now. Look at any tech entrepreneur. The average age is, I think, last time I checked, was about 45. Venture capitalists, older than that. So I'll tell you what, I know quite a few people. I don't know any 25 or even 30-year-olds that are driving around in Lamborghinis and Ferraris with private planes. Eric knows a lot of people.
Oh, yeah, I do.
You don't know anybody that age driving around in Ferraris and Lamborghinis.
All right, it's really funny that you... that you were talking, you know, a little bit about, you know, the age of people,
yeah.
like, that are in these, you know, high riding situations, and how our youth attaches to these incredible personalities. Mm-hmm. They go, well, I want to be like this person and everything like that. And that's cool. Like, who inspires who? But it's funny how we look at a figure like Elon, because I used to, when I was a kid, I really loved video games so much. And one of the guys that really inspired me a lot, another shameless plug, and I gave Mike Tyson a plug, but I'm going to give John Carmack a plug. And now, if you guys don't know, this guy co-founded ID Software, and they came up with some great games. I mean, they're responsible for almost
Tribes,
every...
I believe, right? They did, did they do Tribes?
Yeah, Wolfenstein 3D, Doom, Quake, you know, those
Quake.
Games, all the early
Quake
first-person shooters.
Quake is the one I was thinking, yeah.
But... It's more than just a video game, right? Like, he showed what, like, being a visionary could really do. Like, when I was a kid, that was my visionary, was someone like John, you know, because I just thought it was so cool that he was making these worlds that people would go into and then engage with people and deathmatch or play. Whatever the construct of the video game might even be irrelevant, right? It's more of, like, the community that it fostered and developed, right? You got to look at all the connotations of something, right? You know, John started an entire cottage industry of random things that look at, all right, the tech world that we have now that Elon exists within, and Elon's mm-hmm. age, right? Elon's age compared to someone like John Carmack, you know, John Carmack laid down the seeds that hatched and grew. Well, they don't hatch, seeds grow. Mm-hmm. he laid the seeds out that would eventually sprout into, you know, the large big guys, you know, the Facebooks of the world, and even what we have today to show for all this modern stuff, he was kind of a tiny architect of that, him and many other talented mm-hmm. people early on in those early days of digital media, which video games are just another form of digital media.
Yeah.
But just in a much more crude construct, you know, like if you have an old Nintendo game, that's physical hardware. I mean, you have a physical hard use item that you put into another hard use item and you apply power to it. And there you go. It's in your possession. When it's off, there it is. It's still there. It's a physical thing. I know that's a foreign concept for a lot of young folks to think about, that there is such thing as a physical version of something.
Yeah, I know.
Right? Like you own it, like Vanna White. The point is, though, these young folks are leading such a digital and artificial existence in terms of their engagement with not only digital media, but each other, right? This is getting out of conversation and into just the way people, you know, take in information now. But you look at these kids and this digital, almost fake existence that they live within, you know,
yep.
they even don't understand what it's like to just sit around with each other and have a honest, open conversation, have a little fun and play with other kids and things like that. So it's just different environment, you know. But John kind of, I feel like he was one of the early architects of what we see there.
That was in the golden age of video games when, you know, the games were made, you bought the games. It was you had the physical copy of it and you played it. And I know it's a long lost thing because nobody ever actually has a physical copy of it. But just to reinforce what I was talking about previously, the average age of a successful startup founder was 45. And then it says the average age of a startup founder is 34. So there's a difference there, the correlation being successful. So you're seeing a lot of young entrepreneurs, you know, startup companies, but they're finding that the average age of a successful startup, one that has legs and longevity and survives, is 45. So you're looking at about an 11-year spread there to make up a difference in both, you know, education. Yeah,
11
and
years
wisdom.
Where anything can happen too.
So you know, just I guess the race to get out there and be successful, there's a false expectation based on social media of like what you should have at a certain age. And they're using discourse, aka conversation, to plant that seed. You should have this. You should have that. Why shouldn't you? And no one's saying you shouldn't, but you know, if you want to be successful at a particular thing, you have to do it for 10,000 hours. 10,000 hours is a long time.
That's a lot of repetitions.
That's right.
That's a lot of E chords on a guitar, isn't it?
Oh, boy.
you know, I tell you, it's just so refreshing to have this conversation because I know it leads us to a lot of different things that we can talk about. But I think the overall intended purpose of what I wanted this podcast to sort of accomplish is to plant in a lot, especially I say younger folks, but I guess anyone who's willing to listen and if they think that this changes their mind in a way that will help them, then all the better. I suppose mm-hmm. it's fine for anyone. But primarily the youth, the young folks, is when you think about what they're going through right now, you know, what they've been through, how scary society's been the last couple of years, the amount of separation that they physically and emotionally have from everyone else around them. And when you look at the sometimes violent solutions that some of them have come up with to deal with some of their more terrible problems, I mean, I'm sure that suicide in young folks is way up more than it would mm-hmm. has been in previous past. I haven't looked at the numbers, but I would guarantee you that suicides are higher. I would guarantee you that, you know, people killing each other is probably way up. I mean, just by virtue of the times. I mean, whether it's the tools available, what that's irrelevant for this particular argument, but it's just random to think about what everybody's going through right now, and especially the kids, like what they're going through. And
well, look what's going on in LA with the trains. I mean, you see the trains pull through the supply stations, and people are jumping onto these trains, looting them, opening them up, throwing all the stuff onto the ground. I mean, it's absolutely bonkers. When I saw that, it looked like a third world country. It looked like a train stop in a third world country. There's just garbage everywhere. And, you know, why is that happening? How is it possible that in one of the most populated and, well, heavily populated places in America, Los Angeles, California, that this can take place and no, there's no ramifications, there's no repercussions, nobody's getting in trouble. It's because there is a society, a culture that this is accepted. And I don't know what caused this in California. I know Gavin Newsom was on talking about it. He's like, oh, hey, we're going to increase police. Oh, you mean the police that you defunded like not 6 months ago where you took away all of their funding? Now you want to have more police there? Yeah. So,
oh, we're creating jobs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're going to spike the numbers, right? So when you start getting into like, when you look at how all of this evolves, it starts, and I know it might sound so rudimentary that, you know, something as small as learning the art of conversation and navigating the waters of that conversation without coming to, you know, blows, as they would say, how I can have a conversation with somebody. I may disagree with them vehemently, but I'm not going to throw them under the bus. And this is kind of where you see the quote, change my mind aspect of it. So
the Steven Crowder, by
yes,
the way. Good guy.
Yeah. And the segment itself is brilliant. And the way that it takes place is brilliant. When you start using that Socratic method and you're asking questions and that person is coming to the realization that there are they believe what you believe and you're just kind of poking holes in that way of thinking. It's funny to see the light switch come on. And then there's been times where they just get up and leave. They're like, no, I'm not doing this anymore. And they get up and walk off. It's mainly because they don't want to believe it. They don't want to come to terms that you have shown them that they are incorrect.
All right. I'm going to quote the very brilliant Thomas Sowell.
Oh, yes. I love Thomas Sowell.
Yeah. It's always a great day for a Thomas Sowell quote. It's bad enough that so many people believe things without any evidence. What is worse is that some have no conception of evidence and regard facts as just someone else's opinion. So
that's right.
We tend to make our own reality sometimes, and we're guilty of that. And this digital world that we live in can kind of dehumanize our everyday existence in terms of the way we're trying to approach problem solving. And I guess that's what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah. Well,
that's what I'm getting at.
Well, I think that, you know, it's twofold. One is we have the amazing ability in our hands to fact check somebody in real time. So if I'm actually having a conversation with you, I can fact check you. That's unheard of. And the problem that we're seeing, and this is going to kind of go off the rails, but with these older politicians, they sometimes forget that. So, for example, you'll see like Biden when he's giving these speeches on the press conferences, he's saying things that are lies, things that he's done, because he comes from an era that the phone or the internet didn't really exist. He could say whatever he wanted and he would get away with it. But you can't do that now.
Yeah, it's
you
not can't. Writing a threat yeah. on the bathroom wall.
Yeah, you can't. You know, in high school. If you say something, somebody has the ability to go in there and find out if you actually did it. Now, he did it in like the 80s when he told a reporter like he had like 2 degrees or something like that from university. And even then, it took him a long time. They found out, and he was like, "Yeah, I forgot. I didn't graduate from these schools." But even now, I think on his last press conference, he said something about something he did back in like, you know, oh, he got arrested. He said he got arrested during the Civil Rights Movement, and then the news came out, and they're like, "No, he did not. Did not get arrested." And they come from a different era where you can't fact check, but in the current era, it really does. I mean, it helps with conversation. If I'm talking with you, Eric, and you're like, oh, hey, I did this, and this, and you can go, oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, I was wrong. I was wrong. You know, you can do it right there.
Yeah, you tell me a person that is never wrong, and I will show you a liar. Look, it is okay to be wrong, because actually, when you're wrong, it shows that you were willing to challenge your perception about something, right? Being wrong just means that it's a chance to learn, right? So there are no, you know, truly correct or bad ideas, I suppose, but, you know,
yeah,
it's one of those things.
Well, one of the problems with conversation is that if I tell you something that I know to be true and you disagree with it just out of spite, then it kind of puts that conversation at a standstill, because now I know that you're not even willing to accept the truth. How are we going to progress this conversation if you're going to rest on your laurels and you chose your side and there's no amount of evidence that I can provide to you to show you that, you know, my side of the conversation, then how are we going to progress this farther?
Yeah. If we are going to have discourse and disagreement, it's at least got to be based on something that is conceptually and factually and logistically, yes, and provably true.
Yeah. And it could be something.
It has to be at the base level.
Yeah.
The argument has to, like an amoeba, right? You know, the base argument has to be reality, yeah, before you can divulge too far on.
It's just like one of those weird things. Like you'll go up to somebody and say, hey man, the sky is blue. And they go, well, technically it's not blue. Blue is made up of yellow and orange and green. So when you put them all together, the sky is blue, orange, and green. And you're like, yeah, this conversation's over, boss. Yeah. See ya.
All right. Well, I had a great podcast this week, and I hope you all enjoyed tuning in today. That's probably going to end our conversation here for the day. I think y'all kind of understand where we're coming from, though.
Oh, yeah.
Anything else you want to put out?
No, man. I'm just glad you guys stuck around and listen to two guys talk about talk.
No, hey, man. But that's exactly what it is. But I think we covered the base as well. And, you know, I know this isn't necessarily a gun-related subject for those of you that are still listening on the podcast. I mean, look, I understand that what I do at the core level, people know me for guns, right? And I love firearms, okay? I'm pro 2A guy and everything like that. I'm certainly not trying to make it sound like that's not a thing. I mean, hello, they always say that everything followed by but is bullcrap, right?
Yeah, that's what they say.
I will substitute the word but with however.
However.
I always actually use however a little more, but it is funny how, you know, people, you know, sort of conceive all these things, and it's just neat to mess with.
It was good. It was a good conversation because you got to kind of pry apart and peel back the layers of the onion of how at least I do a conversation and how you do it, like the different points of view of a conversation that you can hold with somebody. And, you know, Eric and I do get into conversations with people that don't agree with our way of life.
Yeah.
Often.
So I'm known for, you know, the gun side of things, I guess what I'm trying to say. But at the end of the day, I try to have a measured view over a wide variety of different topics and a wide variety of different interests and subjects and things like that. So I don't want anybody to think I'm a one trick pony. Okay. Like I do have a brain. I'm not just a redneck. Okay. I've got aspirations, right? You know? Yeah.
Dreams and aspirations.
I want to learn more things. So believe me, at the end of the day, I try to be rounded, well-rounded. And maybe that's a good thing to take away, right?
Like, that's right.
Just try to be more well-rounded. And no matter what it is, whether it's your views or your ability to learn or accept something or not, just be well-rounded in that pursuit, right? You know,
that's right.
I don't think it's really hard to look at, but make sure you go over to Ballistic Ink and pick yourself up a t-shirt. That's one way you can support LLP here today. Really, really appreciate you guys hanging out. We'll see you soon.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Life, Liberty, and Pursuit. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else podcasts are found. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review. We'd really appreciate that. You can support us over on Ballistic Ink by picking yourself up some merch. And remember, guys, dangerous freedom. Have a good one.